Welcome to episode 7 of the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. I am your host, Ryan. It's good to be back to doing some regular style episodes here on the podcast. Very excited for the episode today. Myself and a special guest are going to be talking about two great albums. One is the new Blood Clot album, which is entitled Up in Arms. And after that, we're going to be talking about the seminal Cro-Mags record, The Age of Quarrel. I'd like to welcome a good friend of mine, Mike D. What's going on, Mike D?
Hey, Ryan. How are you?
Doing all right. Yourself?
I'm living the dream.
Good. That's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear that. So, all right. Well, Mike, why don't you, typically what I do with guests is I have them tell the listeners a little bit, you know, about their musical tastes and just like their, you know, their relationship with music and everything. I know obviously hardcore is very important to you. So, I thought you were a really good fit for this episode. So why don't you give the listeners a little bit of info about your taste and everything. So,
all right. Well, I'm really, really old. So kids, remember to stay off my lawn. So I've kind of gone through various, I guess, stages of you know, with music. But the one thing is I generally keep, I'm not a person that jumps from a stage to stage. You know, I keep a love for certain elements of music, right, from my past. I guess growing up, I was primarily a metalhead like a lot of people. I'm not a musician, so it's hard for me to speak to, you know, some musical elements. But I was more into the melodic metal back in the day, the Iron Maidens, the Queensryche when they first came out. Black Sabbath, obviously, was a huge favorite. Blue Oyster Cult, believe it or not, early on. Rainbow, less metal maybe. And then, you know, as time went on, I got harder and harder, and that kind of introduces you to hardcore. And I think my real introduction to hardcore came, like a lot of people, going to shows. You know, you go to college, you go to the student union, and there's 19 hardcore bands for 48 cents. And, right. You know, you drink your case of Peels and you go and smash about. You know, I certainly have a love for classic New York hardcore. I also do like a lot of modern metalcore, different types of punk, crossover, things of that nature. There's very little, there's not a genre, and then even the word genre in music, I mean, we try to pigeonhole things. Right. And I think that that's where sometimes things become absurd. You read these internet battles about, you know, whether this is punk or this is hardcore, or this is metal, or, but, you know, there are very few genres that I would say that I have, don't have at least a, you know, an affinity for, you know, a few tunes or, you know, a certain artist. So I consider myself fairly eclectic, but, you know, without trying to sound like a pompous ass.
I just think it's funny. I was, when you were talking about people arguing about punk online, I was telling one of my old professors a story when we recorded an episode together about how I'm a member of like this one punk Facebook group, and there's always people arguing on there. And the funny thing is, like, I just want to post on there, like, do you guys realize that having a Facebook page for punk, like, probably, like, you know, completely goes against, like, everything that, you know, punk originally stood for, but, you know, that probably.
Well, yeah, I mean, not to go off on a tangent, but, you know, so punk funny. It was a movement more than, you know, it was, certainly the music was a big part of it, but it was more of a movement, and now we've kind of got this whole, I guess they call it street punk thing, which is this highly refined, you know, studio punk that's supposedly a form of music, but it's all about dollars and cents, and it's unfortunate. You know, it's not necessarily bad music, but yeah, people kind of lose the plot there.
Right. Well, the other thing I wanted to mention too is being somebody who wasn't really old enough to be at an age where I could really grasp, you know, the importance of certain albums like Age of Quarrel, and, you know, if you go back to other scenes, you know, being able to appreciate Black Sabbath when they came around, you know, anything that basically sort of changed the game. I always find it interesting to dig into albums like Age of Quarrel, because, you know, for somebody who heard it for the first time, who could really who could really appreciate and sort of just notice the big difference, you know, the you know, what they were doing that hadn't been done before. A lot of times I wish that I could be in those shoes, but I also find it kind of interesting to be in my position where I kind of have to, I'll find an album, get into it, and then I kind of have to do some digging to sort of, you know, do a little bit of like almost archaeology, you know, to uncover what's going on there with the different genres blending together. So it was fun. I mean, Age of Coral is an album that I knew about for a long time and I listened to sporadically here and there, but it was nice to really get into it for this, come to appreciate it more, like I said. So all right, well, before we talk about Age of Coral, we're going to talk about the album Up in Arms by the band Blood Clot, which, I mean, obviously, Blood Clot is a moniker, I guess, of John Joseph.
Yes.
The band actually consists of John Joseph, Todd Youth, who is formerly of Danzig on guitars, Nick Oliveri, who is formerly of Queens of the Stone Age on bass, and Joey Castillo, who is a former member of Queens of the Stone Age and Danzig, actually, on drums. So that's a pretty interesting sort of combination of people to make a hardcore punk record, right? But there was one album that John Joseph released under the Blood Clot moniker previously to this one, which was called Burn Babylon Burn, in 2007, but he enlisted a completely different set of musicians, I guess, on that one. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Not that familiar.
Okay.
I mean, I've heard a few tracks over, you know.
Yeah, I know there's definitely a couple of ex-members of Biohazard that were on that, and I think it definitely shows, like, the difference between that record and, you know, this record, so. But, yeah, so that's all the general info. So, Mike, why don't you give us your overall impression of Up in Arms?
I was pleasantly surprised, to be honest with you. I was very pleasantly surprised. John Joseph's voice, you know, there's no questioning that, you know, he still has that. I mean, I saw them last May. He was touring with Cro-Mags, doing a benefit show down in the city, and he hasn't lost anything vocally. But I'm always tenuous. It always seems tenuous to me when some of these classic bands come out with new albums, or maybe tenuous isn't the right word, but I'm nervous.
Right. You have a sort of
for lack of a better term,
cautious optimism.
Whether it would be overly produced, or you know, they're going to do the same thing over and over again, or whether they're going to try to do too many new things. You know, are they going to do hip hop crossover, and it's not going to, you know? I think too many bands try to be too different and too many bands try to stay the same. I think with this project, he's got that opportunity to kind of do a multitude of things. You know, I mean, essentially he's established and you know, he's still touring with Cro-Mags and has that as a project. Some wouldn't call it Cro-Mags, but you know, as an aside, you know, I had a high school teacher.
The guy who's watching us right now.
Yeah. you know, as an aside, I had a high school teacher, maybe Mr. Wilkes, who used to say that if he did his job right, we would never know what his political take was. So if I do my job right, although it's not a job and I'm not very good at it, obviously, already, no one will know if I'm Team Harley or Team Team John, Team JJ. But in any case, I think... I was really pleasantly surprised by the fact that it had a classic hardcore sound. There was a lot of that ode to Cro-Mags. You know, a lot of that, as a non-musician, sometimes it's hard to get away from that.
Right.
It's hard to not get away from it, but it's hard to really hear the nuances to the music or understand the nuances to the level that maybe you would. So it's going to sound similar when you have such a unique voice and you also have that driving percussion that's common in what we call traditional hardcore.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of that, but it had it had the diversity that you also see in Cro-Mags, if you know what I mean, that made that album so unique coming out at the time it came out.
Right.
And certainly the production value was better than Age of Coral because of the time. Coming in, the vocal production especially, I noticed, you know, it's not as deep. Although there's things you might lose there.
I
mentioned that when we get to Age of Quarrel. But I was really surprised and pleasantly surprised by how many tracks really kind of grabbed me.
Yeah.
And the overall sound and how it grabbed me. I can't say there's a single track on the album that I would say it's a complete throwaway or I hated.
Right.
So I think it's a strong album. I would definitely, if we're doing the genre thing, place it within the hardcore genre, but there's a lot of metal feel to it, and he does a lot with his vocals that I think are pretty unique.
Yeah, I felt a similar way. And I do like, you know, after I had first listened to the album and then I did start doing some research about it, I found out that sort of the origin of this, you know, like, group of musicians actually goes way back to when John Joseph was working as a roadie on one of the Bad Brains tours. So It's odd because it seems like, okay, this is a brand new sort of configuration of guys, but I guess I didn't look specifically at like what the connection was, but I guess the idea for it had gone all the way back to that. So, which I think it's definitely telling, you know, because I hear that, like you said, that traditional like hardcore sound coming through more. I do, you know, it does remind me of Bad Brains, you know, at times when I listen to this record more so than that record Burn Babylon Burn that I mentioned before. So, and it's interesting, like at first listen, like the album seems to maintain this like, you know, nearly sort of breakneck pace like throughout the whole thing, and you know, it gives it sort of a feel of like a half hour sprint, you know, to the finish line, which isn't of course a bad thing. And I feel like in certain ways there's a little bit less like ebb and flow than there actually is on like the Age of Quarrel even, which is, you know, kind of interesting when you think about it. But John Joseph, like you said, I think he still seems to have a lot of gas, you know, in the tank. I kept reading these reviews online where, and it was like bugging me, where people kept saying that they thought he sounded like Tom Araya
on it. Ooh, yeah.
Dude, and I was like, about that. I'm like, like maybe just like a tiny surface comparison. Like, but I'm like, but if you listen past like one song, you know, it doesn't make sense at all for that to even cross your mind really. But, like you said, I think the band sounds really tight. The production's, you know, it's crisp and it's clear. I kind of almost thought like if it had been a little grittier, that wouldn't have been a bad thing to me, but it doesn't sort of cross that line into, you know, what I feel is like overproduction or, you know, something that's too slick. Like, you know, like if you listen to like the Black Album or you listen to, I can't think of another good example off the top of my head.
For me, again, and I know we're kind of branching out a little bit, but when you talk about overproduction, I think, and it fits the music to a point, but I think AFI kind of completely lost their hardcore. Maybe that was their intention. And I like their later music. But it almost gets overly produced. It's almost like they're trying to do too much. They're trying to do too many big studio things to justify being in a studio with a big mid-major label.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of view those. It's almost like, I don't know, like you'd view New Haven Pizza versus Papa Gino's. I like both of them actually,
right.
But I wouldn't compare them. I don't consider them the same kind of food, and I wouldn't compare, you know, early AFI to late AFI. So they always jump to mind when it's talk about overproduction, or metal bands tend to do that when they make money, like you said, Metallica and some of these other bands. I think it's almost inevitable. I agree with you about the grittiness. I think it's difficult when, I mean, their means are different now. His options are different, you know, his vista, his you know, his pathways. So there's more opportunity. But I think while I agree with you, I think I was surprised it wasn't more slick.
Okay.
Great word, slick. And I was kind of surprised.
And it's hard because I always have to think to myself, okay, if I was, let's say I was, you know, in the band and, you know, especially John Joseph, I mean, you know, he was recording records in a time when, you know, they couldn't really get it to sound, you know, as nice as they can now. So I can't really blame anybody for wanting to have a record that's just sounds better in general. So it's kind of, I always play that, you know, I always have that battle in my head sort of. I'm like, okay, I'll give it to him, you know. I'm not going to get too upset about that. That's like a nitpick, you know, but yeah, like it just could have been a little more raw, but no, that's okay.
I would still throw furniture through the window while listening to it. Absolutely,
exactly. So, yeah. But So I think it seems like we're in pretty good agreement as far as overall, you know, our take on the album. So why don't we can talk about some standout tracks now. My first one is the first track. So I don't know if you
title track.
I figured I wouldn't. I don't want to skip over anything or whatever. So, but yeah, I definitely think this is a standout track. And I mean, why don't you sort of?
It was for me too, because of the music. I mean, it's driving, it's fierce. But for me, what stands out about that track is that guitar sound. I'm trying to find a good way to describe it. It's got a little bit of that old Cro-Mag sound, but it's different. And yet, I don't think it's still kind of, it's very edgy. And fierce. It's kind of a fierce sound. it kind of sounds like a violin on steroids being sampled through a vacuum cleaner, but not in a bad way, if you can think of it that way. Okay. It's almost. And then kind of infused with like a razor blade, if you could.
Okay.
Maybe the, you know, violin's being played with a razor blade. Okay. It's got a fierce guitar sound, and that's what really stood out about that track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also think that it's kind of one of the best examples on the album, if not the best example, of just the music and his vocals and the lyrics just really working together perfectly. I mean, you can understand like everything that he's saying on this track, like, and just the lyrics themselves, you know, like when he's saying, you know, he's comparing, or I should say he's using, you know, war and death and everything, like he's using the metaphors of like that it's a business, and also that it's almost like a, you know, looked at like a video game, you know, by a lot of members and groups in society. So I think that it's definitely like it's a great opening statement. I mean, I'm not, you know, surprised at all that they would stick this right at the front of the album. It's kind of like the, you know, like the mission statement, if you will. So great opener. Yeah, I was pretty impressed, you know. So
all guns blazing.
Yeah, so I would hope so on a hardcore record, right? So not that there's any tracks that, you know, wouldn't, I guess, work in that sense. But so what was your what would you say was your next standout?
What jumped out at me was Siva, just because of the Bad Brains influence. I mean, obviously, yeah, he's close to the Bad Brains and HR and all those guys, and came up around the same, you know, the same time, and was influence there. Mm-hmm. And just that chanting, screaming, it was so Bad Brains, mm-hmm, influence. It sounded so much like Bad Brains throughout the years, but really kind of jumped out at me, you know, and I'm probably going to be, you know, exercised and lose whatever little scene card I have, but it reminded me of you know, the quickness kind of that era when they kind of,
yeah,
but the vocals reminded me of that, not the music, you know, certainly.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because the production on that later Bad Brains brings out that sharp burst a little bit more, but that stuck out for me.
Yeah,
that track. You know, some of the other tracks like Prayer, because of it was different.
Yeah,
and it had that kind of cadence that for lack of a better term, the back and forth, the vocals, the quick chops, and but it moves along. But it was kind of a break from the faster stuff.
Right. That's what kind of like the when I was like writing my notes out, I noticed that all the tracks that I wrote down for standout tracks, you know, I guess aside from Up in Arms and I mean, I guess they're all slightly different than. Than the more traditional hardcore stuff that's on the record. While I like those tracks, I mean, these are the ones that I remember. These are the ones that are more memorable to me when I'm not actually listening, you know, to the album. I had the same reaction to Prayer. I also like too about when you were talking about Siva. I like how he's still keeping that. I guess like the, because they were Hare Krishna, I think, right?
Yes. Oh yeah.
So it's that, you know, the certain like Hindu, you know, sort of Hindu like you know, mythology and imagery in there. I like that he's still doing that. That gives it like another sort of layer of meaning and imagery that, you know, you know if you listen to the album and you actually, you know, pay attention, then you might go, oh, you know, that's something I should look deeper into that, like. Mm-hmm. I like that he's still doing that, you know.
That's one thing I can say definitively, just from, you know, going to shows and knowing people that know him. He certainly has not given up his beliefs, and he certainly still is views himself as a teacher.
Yeah.
And, you know, for better or for worse, again, there are varying views on that and how he approaches it, but he pushes forth with all of that. And you definitely feel that in the lyrics of the album, yeah. You know, the views on war, you know, he's obviously he's a vegan, you know, he's a Hare Krishna, and those beliefs kind of come through.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also really like that track Kali too, that, you know, has that, which is another, you know, I guess another Hindu religious figure, goddess, you know, whatever you want to say. I don't want to use the wrong term here. I don't know why I'm being so like, but, I like that track in particular because it's, you know, they like, it seems like they up the ante on that one, especially vocally. Like, you know, he really is going for it on that one. And it's a level of ferocity sort of that I don't think he really gets to that point too many other times on the album. So I think that's a pretty good track. And I really like Slow Kill Genocide too. I think that's a good one. Another one that has in like Prayer, you know, it's a little bit different. There's a little bit more, a little more catchiness, I think, to some of the vocals and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I agreed with that. That actually was a sick, you know, yeah. Slow Kill Genocide, and to some degree Slipping Into Darkness. There was a little bit of a different feel for me, specifically Slow Kill Genocide. I think the music, maybe the bass line. I will say that the one thing that stood out, if you're comparing the two albums we're talking about tonight,
mm-hmm.
I think the bass lines, even if it's not as prominent in the music in some cases because of the lesser level of production back in the 80s. I think the bass in Age of Quarrel is standout.
Yeah.
And that kind of makes a difference. That made that album unique and kind of almost helped give it its metal flow and metal feel while still really setting the standard for modern hardcore. But yeah, Slow Kill Genocide, also the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that change of pace. Those, I guess, you know, you said it before, but those tracks kind of stand out because it's one salvo after another, and it's still fierce, but when he stretches his vocals a little bit or does something a little bit more melodic, it definitely stands out on this on this album.
Also, too, when you were talking about the bass, like, I'm very glad that, and I just talked about this actually on a segment I recorded a couple of days ago for this German band that's called Earthship. They're a metal band, and that album, I mean, it's only a couple years old, and it has a very very strong, thick, like sometimes distorted bass sound on it. And I'm so happy that bassists are actually sort of getting treated a lot better, mm-hmm. I think, than they were for a long time. They're getting a little bit more recognition, I guess, and a little bit more, you know, there's no Ant Justice for All, you know, hazings or whatever the hell happened there, like going on anymore. Like, it seems like it's definitely they're being valued more, I think, as members of the group. And I can really appreciate albums where you can hear the bass just as clearly as you can hear, you know, the guitars or the vocals or anything. So that's another thing I was appreciative with.
I think a lot of times when we listen to music we like and we try to say this, you know, whether we like it more than something else. I mean, I listen to a lot of things that I can tell, you know, obviously they're not brilliant. It's not brilliant musicianship, you know, hardcore especially. You get a lot of bands, you know, a lot of bands that are derivative. I still like them, and there's things that I'll listen to over and over again, and I'll swear by a particular track. But in any case, the bands that we view as being unique or we can recognize as being good, you know, I drink yellow American piss water beer.
Right.
I can recognize the quality in a better beer. I don't like it,
right?
Or I don't maybe like it as much, but I recognize the quality. Some of the bands that we recognize as being more quality or having that quality musicianship generally have strong bass, you know, bass players. And do interesting things with a bass guitar.
Yep.
You know, good guitarists are a dime a dozen to some degree.
Right.
You know, not necessarily people with vision, but at least, you know, those people that can shred.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear some of that on you know, the Blood Clot album.
Mm-hmm.
But the bass work, you know, and let's say Age of Quarrel is listening to it again, you know, I listen to it fairly frequently for an old album. I mean, I guess, I know a lot of people that still do. But the bass work is just, considering how young they were too. I mean, you know, not to qualify everything, you know, to think about these things, but if you really think how young these guys were and where they came from and to hear those bass and those vocals, that it's pretty astounding. But
especially for him. I mean, obviously we'll get into this when we talk about Age of Quarrel, but just to be confident enough to sort of, you know, use vocals like that are not really, you know, it's kind of, you know, he's doing his own thing. So to just kind of throw that out there in a scene like hardcore where there's a certain level of playing by the rules, you know, I guess. So that's, I have a lot of respect for him, especially like you said, being as young as they were. He's got some balls. So, but, I actually really like the last track too, You'll Be the Death of Me. I think that's a good one too. Another track that was memorable. It's an easy one for me to call to mind, you know, when I'm not actually listening to the album. So I think it's kind of like the it's kind of the perfect length too, like at a, you know, just about half an hour or whatever. Because it, even those tracks that, like I said, don't jump to mind when I'm listening to it, are they're still effective enough. You know, like the overall attack is effective enough, and it's not, you know, it's not dragged out. There's no like filler. There's no unnecessary sort of like stuff going on. It's definitely it's very concise, I think. So
that's where hardcore, you know, still carries on the tradition of punk when it's done right. You know, the whole I love musicianship. I do, again, just having grown up listening to metal.
Right.
You kind of have to. But you know, that whole, the opposition of that is that whole punk, you know, that's wanker music, you know. Right, it's right. All about, it's about the construction of the song, right, and about the, you know, the feeling of it, whether it's your emotions, whether it's the politics, depending on who the band is. And you, these songs are kind of like that. They have that old school. It's just, they hit you and then they're gone. They don't try to drag it out. They don't try to do too much. There's definitely those little flares that you hear showing that these guys are legitimate musicians, that they have a unique vision. It's got some nice twists, and you know, but it's still a hardcore album with hardcore breakdowns, but with, you know, metal sounding guitars.
Yeah. I always rate albums. It's one of those things that I struggle with, because like part of me feels like putting a, you know, a number, you know, on how you feel about an album, it's kind of, to me, it smacks of like being pompous, or like, you know, just being, oh, now you're part of the industry or whatever. Like, I feel like, you know, but you know, I do it just because I know there's people out there who might be listening who do use ratings to sort of, you know, decide whether they're going to listen to an album or not. And I mean, I certainly would want somebody to, if somebody said, oh, you know, look at there's this album, you know, let's see what rating, you know, it got on the podcast or whatever. It's like, you know, I would want my rating to sort of convey to that person, yes, you should listen to this. Like, I'd rather that happen, you know, than whatever. But yeah, I mean, if you had to, I do my ratings out of 10, but I always tell guests, I'm like, it doesn't matter what way you would want to do it. You could do it out of 10, out of 5. You could do it a letter grade. You know, you could do like whatever you think. I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here. Sorry about that.
I think just going back to the concept, I think I was pleasantly surprised.
Uh-huh.
I think I thought that there was a good chance it would be really derivative, almost just like a kind of dull. But I thought it definitely had a lot of emotion. It was fierce. It definitely grabbed me. I don't think it's necessarily groundbreaking, although there's definitely some cool tracks and some things worth listening to.
Right.
I don't think 20 years from now we're going to be looking at this as Age of Quarrel or Best Wishes or, you know, Early Agnostic or, you know, anything like that, or I don't know, whatever. The early Brad Paisley country music, or whatever, you know, something groundbreaking in a pigeonholed in a genre. But I would say that, you know, for music, just for the enjoyment factor, if you're talking about the musical relevance factor, I'd give it like a letter grade of maybe like a C plus.
Okay.
But for me, how I enjoyed it, what I would rate the record, I'm dating myself, on a scale of 1 to 10, I would say 7.5.
Yeah,
I really enjoy listening to it. It's just something that I would listen to again and again. Again, I even have to refer to the tracks. There's definitely some things that blend together. But I think everybody should, you know, who's interested in heavy music, should give it a listen. And I think, again, you might be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. I came in at a 6.5 out of 10. So I struggled a little bit with it because, like you said, like my overall enjoyment of it is very high. But like you said, I mean, it's not groundbreaking. It's not necessarily pushing the envelope too far. I definitely enjoy it. I would, you know, if I'm in the mood to listen to hardcore, like I'm sure I would throw it on. You know, maybe put some of the tracks in a mix with some other stuff. So yeah, so definitely enjoy it, and I'd recommend to anybody out there, definitely check it out. It's worth a listen. So all right, so from the sort of modern take on John Joseph's modern take on hardcore, now we move to just the seminal, like you said, the legendary album by the Cro-Mags, The Age of Quarrel, which was released in, I couldn't find an exact date, it's odd, for this, when this was released. It just says September 1986, so I'm not really sure why, but just somebody at some point during September.
Might have been a gradual release. I don't know.
Yeah. They just dropped it on like people's doorsteps or something. Wherever you found it, you know. It was released on Profile Records. It was produced by Chris Williamson, most of the time with sure. 80s albums. Yeah. I'm just like, I have no
yeah. idea who the some guy.
Is. Yeah, some guy. And I mean, obviously, it's this album is considered to be, you know, a definitive album in the East Coast hardcore scene. So, anything I read about this, you know, most common quote is that before this album, you know, blending hardcore and metal was pretty much unheard of. Mm-hmm. So, so yeah, so that's all the, you know, the basic info. And Mike D, I'll just say 3, 2, 1, go.
The Age of Quarrel, I mean, if you listen to it, the thing that stands out, I think, is if you're just listening to it and trying to say how does it stand out in mm-hmm. the history of music, is the blending of metal sounds. And it starts, it really starts, I wouldn't say it starts and ends with the bass, mm-hmm. but it starts with the bass and the bass and drum combination.
Yeah.
And also their willingness to kind of slow it down. Mm-hmm. You know, hardcore before that, you know, and again, I'm not a historian, but mm-hmm. what you see of hardcore was kind of that negative approach kind of thing, which in its own right was groundbreaking. I mean, when Victim right. of Pain by Agnostic, Victim of Pain came out, you know, that was a real salvo, you know. Yeah. But this was was kind of a change of pace. And I think when people, if you, you know, you're a 18-year-old kid who listens to Dillinger, you know, Dillinger Escape Plan, mm-hmm. and considers that metalcore, Drowning Man, or mm-hmm. and maybe I'm dating myself even with Drowning Man, but this is a whole different ball of wax. This is it's more in specifically in the hardcore genre. There's no doubt, but it's just infused with it with a sound that's kind of unique and kind of remains unique. Mm-hmm. I was trying to think of if any other band has kind of had this. Other than Agnostic, when they moved forward and kind of put metal, and they went a little overboard, when you know, and got a lot of criticism, and I think that again, that just like you know, and Bad Brains when they went through their little metal phase, mm-hmm. they got a lot of criticism, and I think a lot of that was trying to tap into in Bad Brains' point, in the case of Bad Brains, I should say, mm-hmm. trying to tap into a certain market, right, you know, right. for a certain label, mm-hmm. but I think those, while that music definitely, I still think it has value, significant value. And people should just not discount it completely, like some scene heads do.
Right.
I think this really, it may still stand alone as the ultimate kind of mix, vista for metal into hardcore,
right.
And also hardcore as songs as really musical compositions.
Right.
You know, again, I try to think back, but I mean, even Bad Brains doesn't really have. These songs are rich, for lack of a better term. They're like yeah. rich and creamy. They're very thick in a lot of ways, even though they're in a lot of ways, the guitar sounds very pitchy. It's very, yeah. You know, aggressive and they're very driving. Mm. There's some, whether it's the intros, whether it's the breakdowns, there's a lot of real thick, powerful, rich moments
yeah,
on this right. album. And that's what really stands out. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I would say, you know, also both with John Joseph's vocals and the tone of the music is that there's a, like a legitimate, I think you can sense anger, mm-hmm. and I think you can sense on the Blood Clot album we talked about, mm-hmm. I don't think that there's a legitimate sense of menace, and specifically on, you know, it stood out for me when I was listening to the work again, Don't Tread on Me. I don't think there's a song on Blood Clot, and there's not that many songs out there that have that kind of dread menace that aren't almost operatic. You know, operatic, where there's, you know, there's almost violins in the background and right. chanting monks and nuns and, right. you know, that, you know, it's some sort of, you know, there's a video from Penny Dreadful playing in the background. I think there's a legitimate almost, it's almost ominous. It's a street dread. Yeah. It's legit. There's a legitimacy to it. Mm-hmm. And it almost gives you chills if you're kind of listening to it. I bet you if I, you know, I had a few beers right now and, mm-hmm. and I was listening to it, it would kind of give me a chill. And I think that the whole album kind of maintains that sense of legitimacy, mm-hmm. whether it's necessarily like just, you know, yelling that they got to know something or right. Talking about the hard times they go through or, you know, there's a real menace to some of these songs and a real ferocity that's not all driving. It's kind of almost mm-hmm. Laid back, like a cage, like a cornered lion almost.
Yeah, yeah. What struck me, I mean, going back and listening to it, you know, from front to back, was just how like instantly with We Gotta Know. I mean, there's no screwing around. Like, it's mm-hmm. like, that's, you want to talk about the fusion of, you know, the metal and the hardcore. Like, it's right there, you mm-hmm. know, it jumps right out of you. So, I really, that, like, that song in particular, I've always appreciated it. And I definitely appreciate it more now, because now I know a little bit more about, you know, the history. You know, I know a little bit about more hardcore as a scene, and then, you know, this sort of, you know, when they started, you know, mixing the, you know, the peanut butter and the chocolate here, you know, more than I did before when I was younger. And, you know, his vocal approach too, I mean, like, much like with the Blood Clot record, maybe more so with Age of Coral, like, he just seems to, he does his own thing, and like, it's just a very, like, interesting vocal approach, like, in its variability. Like, there's times when he almost sounds, of course I can't think of what track, I think it's Malfunction, I think it's on that track, like, he almost starts to sound like, like, he's singing in a manner that's almost like, almost sounds a little bit like Dio.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm just imagining some people listening to that, you know, back when the album came out, and like, holy, like, where the hell did that come from? Like, you know, like, it's things like that, that stand out the most to me. So, I mean, I think you summed it up pretty well, you know, the importance of it. I kind of wish that I had, you know, in a way I'm torn. I wish that I had, known what I know now about the history about with hardcore and everything before going into it, to sort of have those glasses on, you know, but in a way too, it was kind of nice to come at it from a perspective where, you know, I've already been exposed to so much music that's a blending of genres, you know, metal mixed with so many other genres that my ear was already kind of like, probably a little bit more accepting of that, I guess, mm-hmm. than people might have been, you know, back in 86. So, but yeah, so, I mean, as far as I know it's hard to even pick out, you know, specific tracks that, that you could say, oh, this is a standout, you know,
yeah.
But like I said, for me, We Gotta Know is definitely mm-hmm. Just a great opener. I also think World Peace is just a great track.
Oh yeah.
The thing that gets me about World Peace is because I'm not like, didn't have that much exposure to your typical, you know, worldviews with hardcore, like, it just seemed like it was a little bit of a curveball that he was, it was weird. It wasn't like really anti-authority necessarily. It was more like just laughing at, you know, sort of like the hippie culture and like, mm-hmm. I don't know if that's if that was just my reaction that it was a curveball, or it was just sort of,
you know, I don't know who the songwriters are, but I mean, when you yeah. think about the history of even the band members, I mean, you yeah. know, the, you know, Harley came out of the rough spots in New York, you know, it was a different form of music, different form of culture, but coming out of the Lower East Side in the 80s,
right.
Where things were rough and tumble, they just didn't, these guys didn't really have that kind of time. I'm sure there was a lot of cross section and intersection with the counterculture mm-hmm. that was left from the 60s and 70s. Right. And certainly it was the era of Reagan. And, right. you know, you get the vibe, like you said, that they're anti-authoritarian in a sense, but they won't follow the common ground.
Right.
They have a very specific view of things, and they find, you know, hippies and mm-hmm. Maybe some of the punks in that generation kind of laughable.
Okay.
Yeah. While also, you know, viewing, you know, the far right wing politics that they dealt with down there. Mm-hmm. You know, at that point, there was the beginnings of, you know, the Nazi skins, Nazi, you know, Nazis infusion in hardcore and punk in New York. But from what I can understand from my reading and from talking to people that were there, mm-hmm. it was people, you know, like the guys of the Cro-Mag generation and mm-hmm. Harley and John that kind of nipped that in the bud right then yeah. and there.
Right.
All those crews down there, mm-hmm. You know, Jimmy Gestapo and all those guys. So they kind of were in a unique standpoint, in a unique situation. And there was that one core group of bands down there
yeah.
That kind of influenced each other and core group of people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you hit the nail on the head. It expresses a worldview that's filtered through his religion and through his politics and right. or their religion and their politics at the time, depending on who's writing the song. But doesn't follow the normal, you know,
yeah.
Cat Stevens, right. guitar strumming.
Yeah, I always like when like has that sort of nuanced you know, worldview. Like, it's not, you know, it's not either, it's not either just, you know, the hippie culture or, you know, like a more compliant sort of, you know, like I said, it's anti, there's the anti-authority stance, but, mm-hmm. but like you said, it's not, we're not suddenly going to jump on the hippie right. bandwagon just because they, you know, share some of the views that we do, you know. No, this is a very specific thing. And I thought it was interesting too. I was like reading about how both John Joseph and Harley Flanagan were both involved with like jiu-jitsu and mm-hmm. boxing and stuff like that. Like that's one of the things that comes across to me is that, you know, they're very much, you know, they're not just guys in a band.
No.
Like they're not like, you know, guys that are just going to the studio to yeah. to record for a couple hours and then they're going back to like their day job at, you know, whatever, that record store or something. Like, no, they're mm-hmm. these guys are actually very involved in these different, you know, in these different scenes and these different movements and everything. And I think that's something that comes across too, you know, in the music. It feels very authentic, like you said, about that legitimacy, you know.
There's a discipline that, you know, again, not knowing either of those gentlemen or any member of the band personally, but there's a discipline that comes across for such young musicians playing such a raw form of music with very yeah. limited production value. Mm-hmm. And again, maybe that's why some of these tracks have that menace, because it's almost yeah. like for a moment they're holding back. Mm-hmm. And then the next track, they kind of explode again.
Yeah.
But there's definitely, that does come across. And I mean, you know, both of those guys are still,
yeah.
you know, Harley's still deeply involved with them. I mean, he's writing books. He's coming out with new musical projects, you know, mm-hmm. to give him a plug. Yeah. I'm actually looking forward to reading his book. But he, you know, is still very involved in martial arts. And I mean, John Joseph is just the show I was at was a benefit show that I believe John had organized, actually, for a young man with cancer, young adult and or a child, and Siv was playing the show, and I believe it was him that made the comment that they're just exhausted watching that John Joseph does like yeah. more before he has his morning latte.
Right.
You know, it's a kind of a spin on that old Army commercial. But I mean, the guy is just out there organizing benefit shows, and he's running marathons, and he's you know, selling a new book on veganism, and he's talking about religion, and he's cross-pollinating, and he's got varied interests, and he does seem to have a unique worldview that's based on bringing all of these together in some amalgam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for lack of a better term, he's kind of like a modern situationist stripped of the leftist politics. I mean, he kind of does that whole, what do they talk about, walking down the aisle of a grocery store and taking different packages and taking what you want from them and mm-hmm. then leaving the rest on the ground. And I think in a lot of ways, he kind of forms his worldview from that. And and I think their music also comes across a little bit like that. They listen to a lot of different things. They were exposed to a lot of different forms of music, and their lives are interesting. And again, I don't want to get facts wrong, so I don't want to go too much into it, but I would invite anybody. I would think it would be great to just even read a Wikipedia page, even if it's only 84% accurate, you know,
right.
on either of these, either the main figures, Harley Flanagan or John Joseph.
Yeah.
And just the, you know, the backgrounds. I mean, you know, Harley has kind of a vista into that whole, almost like hippie lifestyle and Marrakesh, and well, I'm just throwing words out there now. It's just like, you know, it's like Robin Williams slowed down to like, I don't know, but you know, it's definitely the history informs the music informs the history, and I think in a lot of ways it created a certain quality, just that all the different backgrounds that they kind of brought into this.
I just like a few days ago, I thought to myself, you know, Since I was checking out the Blood Clot record, let me check out some stuff that Harley has done, because I really didn't have any exposure to what he had done, you know, since the Cro-Mag. So I was listening to the album he released. I think it was only released like a few years ago, or even maybe newer than that. But it's actually called Cro-Mags. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know. But
I think I've heard a few tracks on it.
Yeah, but
there's that ongoing.
Yeah, yeah.
Dispute.
I know. Yeah, right. Yeah. I guess you should, yeah. I guess when you, it's kind of obvious when you make the title of your album the, you know, the band that you, you know, were in, and there was that strife or whatever. That is kind of a statement, I guess, to, you know, what you think is, you know, the authentic side of the band. But whatever. that's a good thing about, you know, sort of being a, not necessarily being too close to the situation. You can sort of appreciate both sides of the coin.
Right.
And then one other track that like I, that I really wanted to mention, like I said, I mean, they're all great tracks. You know, there's nothing that I, would skip through or think is a bad track on this album. But one other track that really caught my attention was Seekers of the Truth.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like that track, you know, there's so many tracks on the album where the metal and the hardcore are, you know, fused together, blended so well. But I feel like Seekers of the Truth is really an indication sort of the possibilities of like where, you know, where Cro-Mags could have been headed, and in a lot, you know, many ways were headed,
right,
with the subsequent albums, especially with like Alpha Omega. I found that to be pretty striking. Like, you know, like I said, even as a person who wasn't listening to this album as a, you know, somebody who was really into hardcore, traditional hardcore and everything, and somebody who wouldn't be as surprised by this sort of development in their sound, like the song was still striking to me. Here's a band that's confident enough to take this slightly different sound and write, you know, write a whole track, you know,
mm-hmm.
not be afraid to sort of fully go down that rabbit hole, you know. And I thought that's just something that I think is really important, you know, with an album like this and a band like this, because so many bands, I feel like, you know, they mix genres, but they sort of, like I said, they do it within the confines of a song. It's like not, they don't really stretch it out too much, whether it's for fear of...
It's artificial?
Yeah, exactly.
Or they try to do a 50-50 blend, or there's almost right. like a...
Yeah, like there's parameters that they have mm-hmm. to follow or something. Like,
this sounds, like... yeah, Age of Quarrel sounds organic, for lack of a better term. Yeah. They wrote music that they wanted to write, that mm-hmm. you can hear the influences of metal bands, and, you know, he had various vocal influences, obviously, you know, even yeah. back then... The crossover influence with Bad Brains is evident, I think. There's it doesn't seem contrived in any way
right.
at all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generally any time type of time a band that supposedly fits within a certain genre is doing a work mm-hmm. with other elements. There's always that danger,
right.
you know. Is it artificial? Is it contrived? Are they just doing it to say they're, you know? They're yeah. doing something new or unique.
It's kind of like one of the problems that I've always had. As much as I like Killswitch, I like Killswitch Engage, like I've always had like a problem with the tendency to, you know, for it to be very predictable. Like in that, okay, here's the screamed vocals in the verse, and then the chorus where it's going to open up, or they'll flip that around or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of always follows that like same pattern, especially since like. I have one of the very early Blood Has Been Shed records.
Mm-hmm.
That to me felt much more genuine than, you know, a lot of the stuff that Killswitch did. I mean, it's Killswitch is enjoyable, you know, and it, you know, it's it'll, you know, kind of get you amped up and stuff like that. But that, I think it's like when those guys got to that point, you know, it was a little bit more them trying to be a little bit more commercial. I think they were trying to make a few more dollars, and you can't fault them for that. But yeah, that's the kind of thing that I don't feel, you know, an ounce of on Age of Coral. You yeah. know what I mean? It's like, they were able to just take metal and hardcore and fuse it in a way that, like you said, doesn't feel contrived at all. And it's an amazing record. So.
Yeah, it has that, you know, going back to my point of, I know, you know, I may not like something, you know, I may not like a beer as much as I like a piss water beer. I may not, you know, at this particular moment want to eat good pizza or eat a good sandwich. Right, I want to just eat a, you know, whatever.
Right.
A hot pocket. Because I have a taste for it right now. But I defy anybody who's, again, I'm not talking about like my mom, you know, but I defy anybody who's into heavy music to not listen to that album and put it in the context of times and not think it's important on some level and right. not think that it's got a quality. Whether you know, you want to say it's, you know, completely groundbreaking or just, you know, has a couple moments, but I would really defy anybody to argue with me and just say that album is in any way derivative
right.
or that it would just, it didn't lead to other bands, other, I mean, you can, if you sat yeah. down with, you know, your laptop and we went over, I don't know, YouTube videos or whatever, we would find the bands yeah. right away. And even to this day, mm-hmm. they kind of try to follow that model.
I like it. It's like they're one of those bands that they're that important. And you may not, you know, if you talk to somebody who's 18 years old, like somebody who's really into, like you were saying, like Dillinger or somebody, you know, less of those people might know the name Cro-Mags than you would hope.
Unfortunately.
Right. But I think, like you said, if you were to just hand anybody this album, you know, I think that they would definitely, they may not understand the importance of it right away, mm-hmm. but I think that it's definitely a good enough album that anyone would definitely, you know, find some enjoyment in it.
And I don't know about you, but I know dozens, and I'm not, as I said, a musician. I know dozens and dozens of musicians mm-hmm. in that kind of genre, in the scene, outside the scene.
Yeah.
And nobody that I've ever talked to who's heard the album mm-hmm. has ever said anything negative about it that I can recall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's viewed, and then obviously people in the scene. And, you know, the scene down in New York, as far as personal, you know, any small scene, just like any small political group, you know, everybody wants to be, you know, more anarchist than thou, more Nazi than thou, more hardcore than thou, more skinhead than thou, more, you know, punk than thou. And there's always going to be those kind of schisms that just seem to happen. And, you know, who hates who and who chases who out of what town, depending on how rough the scene is.
Yeah.
But everybody loves those early Cro-Mags albums. Yeah. Everybody loves the Cro-Mags, you know. They may not like all the personalities in the band,
right. They may not like,
but they don't say they can't bring themselves to say anything bad about that music.
Right. Yeah.
And I think there's you know, you talked about the legitimacy, you know, the uniqueness of the worldview and the lyrics and the legitimacy of them. And I think, and the music. And I think a lot of that just comes from the fact that at that point they were living that, you know, legitimate lifestyle, you know, hard times, Sign of the Times, Street Justice. You know, these are guys that came out of, you know, were in fairly rough places, at least at some point, you know, around the time of recording, before, a little bit before, maybe a little bit after, or, you know, during. You know, New York hardcore in that generation, and I'll make a definitive statement, there was more of that sense of having lived it,
mm-hmm.
that you were expressing real, real experience, you know. Boston hardcore and God forbid, I have love for a lot of Boston hardcore bands or the West Coast groups. There's their lyrics, I mean, it probably expressed their angst, you know, that almost punky angst that we now hear just from whiny street, overproduced street punk bands. But, you know, that, because they came from more of a suburban background, and in most cases, a lot of the musicians and a lot of the hardcore kids, for lack of a better term. God. But New York hardcore was really... It had that really street vibe early on.
Yeah.
There was really that sense. And I think that definitely comes across and it adds to the legitimacy, but really it's the musicianship and that damn bass and percussion combination.
Yeah. Because I mean the authenticity of coming from that genuine, like you said, the genuine atmosphere of the streets, like that would take them a certain distance. Even if the musicianship was, you know, a little bit subpar or whatever, but it's like, no, I mean, that's the musicianship is right there with it. So, I mean, that just, yeah, I mean, it really just makes the like you said, the complete package, you know, of authenticity there. So, and I'm certainly not, when I say I'm a musician, that just really means that I, at this point, I think I get my guitar out like once every few months or so when I have a minute free from my kids, like, you know, like if one of my kids isn't on me, like I'm a jungle gym, you know, and I can actually like do something with my hands, like, yeah, then I might play. So I still sort of, you know, I still understand enough about music to sort of be able to pinpoint certain things, you know, when I listen to albums. And I'm certainly not somebody who, I don't mind if something's a little bit sloppy, like if there's a little bit more energy and a little bit less technical ability, I don't mind that at all. You know, like a lot of those, you know, just like the early punk records, I mean, you know, if you listen to like the Sex Pistols and, you know, stuff of that nature, you know, to a large degree it's more about the feeling than it is about the, you know, the performance.
Right.
So so I don't, certainly I'm certainly no snob when it comes to ability or whatever. Like I another example, like if you go to the opposite end of the spectrum, is like, you know, I've gone to see like Dream Theater a couple of times, and I can really appreciate like their ability and everything, but like I just get really angry when John Petrucci does things like when they put like a camera that's like on his front hand so you can watch like how fast it's going. Like I can't stand stuff like that. That's pretentious. I mean, like for me, it's more about what are you doing with the music?
Right.
You know, what kind of, you know, how are you trying to influence somebody's worldview with the music more than are you just like up there, you know, wanking off with, you know, it's just, so I'm very much in the middle when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I know a lot of guys that swear by Dream Theater. I just can't get into them. But I can definitely recognize that they're good musicians, that they have some interesting ideas, that they're very talented. But that's, hardcore is about fury. You know, metal, I think that's been one of metal's problems, you know, if there's a problem, if you want to call it a problem. Maybe I'm being a little too pompous myself, but metal, there's been too many guys that have just gone off at the deep end. For a while, it was speed, you know, it was Steve Vai and Yngwie Malmsteen, you know, again, dating myself, but then you went into like that Racer X stuff that, you know, and it just was all about how crisp and fast you could be, and everybody wanted to do it, and they had all these projects of musicians, and, you know, hardcore is always about, is because it comes from punk, is always about the fury and the emotion. You know, my friend Mark would call it, you know, to quote him, that a hardcore show is about the kiddie calisthenics, the young guys going airborne, you know, the pit, you know, the dancing, and the energy and the feel, the sing along with the singer, the you know, the connection. You know, punk to me was about earlier, you know, 77 punk or 77 core, whatever they call it. You know, was the beginning. It was kind of about revolt. You know, not revolt against your parents, but really true revolt against society on some level. And the music itself was almost secondary in a lot of ways, you know. Hardcore was about rage. And it could be rage about the same things, but it's not as angsty. It's a little more, you know, punks would hit each other. But when you got hit, you know, hardcore was about getting hit, even musically, to really beat this metaphor to death. But you get hit, you know. It's the difference between, you know, I guess a mohawk and a skinned head. You go back to, you know, we both have talked about recognizing value. And, you know, I love a lot of straightforward hardcore that's derivative. I love a lot of stuff that I think is doing, you know, Wisdom and Chains jumps into mind because I love them as a band. I think they're especially live. Even recorded music is so ferocious. And they have a definitive worldview, and they're obviously angry, and they're pretty tight as far as to the naked, non-trained ear. And I think they're doing really good things, but I thought about that on the way over because I was listening to them, you know, the other day right before. And it's just nothing grabs you like, you know, the Age of Quarrel or Age of Quarrel and, you know, Cro-Mags. Early Cro-Mags. There's just a difference. It's just, you know, beat that word seminal to death. it remains kind of unique in a lot of ways, that early sound. Even the song Death Camps, you know, which isn't on that particular album, always one of my favorite Cro-Mags tunes. Just again, that menace. It's thick. The bass line, it changes tempos to some degree, but it's still got drive. It's still got that hardcore drive to it. We talk a lot about genres, aren't we? I think it's inevitable, isn't it? Every album you talk about?
It's something that I definitely dip into probably every episode. So, I mean, that's certainly not out of the ordinary. So
it's hard to do. It's hard to probably review an album like that without putting in the context of, you know, the other hardcore, so to speak, that came out at the time, you know. You know, I would invite somebody to play a Negative Approach album, or even a Minor Threat album. And believe me, I love Minor Threat. You know, compared to a Cro-Mags album, and they're completely different. They're 80% different. But the rage is, the aggression is still there, and you still, I would have to say that anybody who listened to would say that the spine is the same. That's what makes it hardcore, you know. It's that spine is still there, that's very similar between those, even though the music is significantly different than those early guys, and it's definitely more interesting in my mind.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm gathering that if you had to rate this thing, I mean, you're going to rate it a 10.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it just for musical relevance, but also just, you know, just the music itself. I mean, you know, you could do the whole nobody's perfect 9.5 thing. But I think, right. honestly, just like I kind of, you know, the difference in our rating was because I put that side letter rating as far as long-term musical relevance. And, you know, I mean, this is an A-plus as far as long-term musical relevance. It still resonates today. And I think just that mixture, and, you know, I've been all over the map, but I think if you just mix together that the percussion, the bass, his John's vocals, his vocal style, the fact that he does do some different things and is willing to take those chances and those challenges early on, and the energy, the frenetic energy. I mean, you know, when we talk, you know, we kind of gloss over, but we talked almost about the fact that these guys are, you know, into these disciplines like jiu-jitsu or whatever. These guys are bundles of energy.
Yeah.
You know, just as an outsider looking in, I mean, I've seen the for lack of a better, I'm just going to say the project that is currently touring as Cro-Mags two or three times. One time was kind of a blur, but actually that blur night, way too many Jamesons and Gingers, and hopefully my wife isn't listening to this, because that wasn't a particularly great night, or some of my friends from Houston who had to go out in the slums of Hartford looking for me. But in any case, when I wandered back into the show, Cro-Mags was on, and just, you know, the flashing lights, and you're looking at a guy who's, you know, older than me, and I'm pretty damn old, and just how frenetic, and just, you know, you're kind of drunk, and it's like pink and purple, and there's flashing lights, and bodies smashing into you, and you're screaming, and he's screaming, and you only see, you know, John Joseph, John Bloodclad's shadow, and, you know, his arms are waving around, and it's just fierce, and he's always like that. The energy level is just tremendous. Yeah. Even if you don't like... The energy is contagious. I mean, it really is.
Right.
It comes across in the recorded material at a slower pace almost. But you know, when they play live, you know, it's unfortunate that I didn't get to see the original band, you know, the original lineup. But, you know, I got to give props to that lineup. And the last time I saw them when they were, you know, I was sober, essentially. yeah, they were tight. They were pretty fierce, and I think, you know, it's the total package.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's the total package.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that level of energy at that age always amazes me too. Like somebody like Bruce Dickinson, I'm like, how is it possible? Like, he's like flying the plane to like every country they're going to. Then, you know, then they're doing these two-hour shows or whatever. He's all over the stage. Like, it just boggles my mind. I mean, I remember seeing like Ozfest like 99, I think, or something like that. I remember seeing Rob Zombie playing. I'm not a big Rob Zombie fan to begin with, but I was more of a fan of White Zombie. But I remember watching him just run back and forth across the stage, and he couldn't even sing, like, because he was just running. I'm like, dude, just stand still for like 10 seconds and sing. Like, just stop. Like, there's enough going on the stage,
right,
you know, that you don't even need to go anywhere. But it's like Bruce Dickinson is like the opposite. I mean, the guy he's everywhere on the stage, and he, you know, he's like singing every, you know, practically every word. It's like incredible to me. And the guy's, you know, however old, he's like 60, I think, at this point.
I gotta be. I haven't seen those guys in years, but there was, you know, they were a major arena band, but they kind of came out of that same kind of background. I mean, if you read, you know, which I wasn't really aware of until recently, they kind of almost came out of a DIY kind of, you know, grassroots, ground up kind of thing in England, where they really, they did the small clubs and the streets and the street fights and, almost out of that hooligan like thing that hooligan lifestyle produced so many of the Oi bands and some of the early punk bands. And so that I think your early Iron Maiden, I know Bruce wasn't part of the first couple of albums, but you get that vibe from early Iron Maiden, that there's like a punk sensibility to a metal album, just like there's kind of a metal musicianship to a hardcore album here with Age of Quarrel.
This was definitely an awesome discussion.
Well, hope so.
Right. Yeah, no, it was really good. It was really
if anything, it was at least maybe if people are tired, it'll help them sleep. I don't know. My voice droning on about Krishna core and but I mean, I appreciate you asking me to do it.
No problem. I knew, like I said, I knew when I had the Bloodclad album in mind, and then started thinking about Age of Quarrel. I knew you'd be a great fit for it. So. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was definitely a lot of fun. So, and thank you for being on.
And thanks for having me. And let me just say, you know, I don't do the whole hashtag thing, and I don't want to sound too hokey, but you know, when we're getting up, I'm getting up there in years. So if there's any possibility, doesn't necessarily sound good, but if there's any possibility, let's end the quarrel. Maybe we see, you know, nothing against any of the projects that are out there right now involving these guys, because they're great. You know, and the energy's high and the music is fabulous. And like I said, I was pleasantly surprised with the Blood Clot album. But let's end the quarrel even briefly, and you know, have these guys on stage together a couple more times, if at all possible.
All right, Michael. Thank you again.
And all right, Ryan.
It's been cool. So
stay tall.
at least for a little while. all right. Well, that concludes episode 7, Radio Live Transmission. Thank you guys for listening, and I will catch you soon.